Money FM 89.3, the best of Saturday mornings. International News Review.
We are back with Steve Okun, Senior Advisor at McLarty Associates, for our International News Review. Steve, how was your trivia night this past week?
Well, as a team, we came in second, so I was not happy because I thought we should have won. But there was one question where I was the only person in the entire room to get it right.
So really, this is all about your ego.
No, I need to ask you that question.
Obviously, we're not going to get it.
If you get it. Okay, Glenn first, Neil second. In which movie musical did Jodie Foster play Tallulah?
I know it already.
My name is Tallulah. There's something fun.
I don't remember.
Neil?
Bugsy Malone.
Oh. And the reason I got that question right is because if you remember about a month ago, Glenn made comment that somebody thought he looked like Tom Cruise.
Right.
Which of, not Tom Cruise. Was it Tom Cruise or Billy Joel?
Billy Joel.
Both of them not.
Not even remotely close. I will be the first to admit that.
I said, oh, I was Scott Baio. People thought I looked like Scott Baio in high school. And then you, Neil, said
Bugsy Malone.
And that's, I remembered that. And so that is why I got it right. So I give Neil the credit for me being the only one in the room to get Bugsy Malone.
What can I say? All roads.
So you just disparaged him about making it about him, but in fact, he was making it about you.
Exactly.
Of course it was about
There's
me.
There's a lesson learned there.
And just one last thing, though. Yeah. I am a proud graduate, of course, of the University of Virginia, founded in 1819. So take that. Take that, Mr. Humphreys.
200 years. Johnny come lately.
You new countries, you're so needy.
Anyway. Okay. Hey, first story today, the Trump trial in New York City about paying the money to Stormy Daniels and misrepresenting financial data and things. I don't like it that it's called a hush money trial because it's about so much more than that.
Of course.
But anyway, so the Supreme Court is weighing in on Trump's claims of immunity for the broad protections to get out of some of these suits. Now they believe there's going to be a preliminary ruling coming on it soon, right, Steve? That is going to maybe be partly protective and partly not of presidential protections on this?
Yeah, so we've got the trial in New York, which won't be affected by the Supreme Court decision because the Supreme Court decision is about what actions of a president are protected that are immunized, and those would be public actions as opposed to what is a private action, which doesn't get any immunity and that you're subject to criminal prosecution. The case in New York is about what he did before he became president.
Right.
So that is not apply to this Supreme Court hearing. But this Supreme Court hearing is extraordinarily critical because it's a much more important constitutional question. And that is what constitutes an official act by a president for which they receive immunity and what does not. And the Supreme Court had almost a 3-hour discussion on this very single issue, and it is really complicated, and it is unclear which way the Supreme Court is going to go. And if the Supreme Court finds potential immunity, then what Donald Trump did on January 6th, which is the most serious of the constitutional charges, could be dropped.
This is fascinating to me.
Right.
From a philosophical point of view, a political science point of view, the great thing supposedly about the U.S. system is the checks and balances, the strands of government, separation of powers. How can a president, past or present, have any form of immunity? Surely no one in the American system should be considered above the law.
Well, if this is the question. When I went into government and I went to the Department of Transportation and I had a briefing on this issue, and they said, if you act in your official capacity, then you are not subject to criminal prosecution. So make sure you act in your official capacity. An example of this would be, let's say we were looking at a rulemaking on airline safety, and we decided, you know what, we're not going to require airlines to do this. We think the chance of a crash happening is too limited and the cost is too much, and so we wouldn't go forward with it. So if we make that decision and then a plane does crash, and if we had put that rule into place that would have prevented the crash, you can't come after me for either either civil or criminal prosecution because I was acting in my official capacity. Right. Government officials need to know that they can make a tough decision without being prosecuted. So you have to have that. The question becomes, what's the difference between an official act and a private act? What happens if – so a president needs to know, I'm going to make the tough call to order, you know, Navy SEAL Team 6 to go in and assassinate a terrorist. That is going to be allowed. What happens, though, if it's not a terrorist? And is a president going to be, well, I'm not going to make this decision because what happens if I lose the next election or I'm not president anymore and I can go to jail? Mm-hmm. They need to know they make a decision in the best interest of the country. So you have to give them immunity when it comes to official decisions.
But just to add, Steve, jump in here. Sending out an order to take out Osama bin Laden is not the same as allegedly inciting an insurrection against your own government. So there are different issues here, Steve.
Or ordering somebody to assassinate one of your political rivals, right? Yeah. This is where it gets complicated.
That's where it gets complicated.
Because you could theoretically get immunity from state-sponsored assassinations.
He allegedly instructed guys to take a storm on the White House.
And so the question then becomes, how does the Supreme Court write this in a way so that a president can do and make very tough calls in their official capacity while not allowing this type of criminal behavior? Because if you say a president has absolute immunity, which Donald Trump is arguing for, even his lawyers aren't arguing that anymore. But if he says he has official immunity for anything he does as president, you can't allow that. Yep. But you also can't say that we're going to be unclear as to where this line is. And so that's what the Supreme Court is really struggling with. Where do you draw the line between an official act and a private act? It's very tough.
But just to wrap it up, he wants a delay, though. Long story short, he wants to delay this decision until after November. Will he be able to do that?
I mean, that's what the Supreme Court is going to struggle with. And there were four justices who recognize we need to make this decision so that this January 6th case can go to court so that the voters can know in November what they're voting on, what type of person they're voting on, whether this person is a criminal or not. And they would like to delay this case. You know, Trump and his lawyers would like to drag this case out. And we don't know where it's going to go. As Justice William Brennan, a very famous recent justice from the Supreme Court, he said, look, with five votes, you can do anything on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So we know where four votes are. The question is, where is Chief Justice Roberts going to go in trying to get a trial sooner rather than later?
All right. Let's move on to our next story. Joe Biden signed legislation this past week that would ban TikTok in the United States unless its parent company, ByteDance, sells the app. Now, the ByteDance has come back in the last 36 hours, saying that it has no intention of selling the business after this U.S. law was passed. And so where are we with this? It's a real conundrum.
I don't know if it's much of a conundrum. I mean, the law is very clear. It's not TikTok that's being banned from the U.S. It's ByteDance's ownership that is being banned from the U.S. because ByteDance is, as the U.S. government has found, is and subject to the control of the Chinese government and the Chinese Communist Party, and they can use TikTok for purposes that will harm U.S. national security.
ByteDance disputes this. They say they're headquartered in Singapore and they're independent of the Chinese government.
But the U.S. government has said we've found this, and so it's irrelevant what ByteDance says about whether they're controlled or not. The question that's going to be before the court is not ByteDance is subject to being controlled by the Chinese government. It's whether that this law violates the First Amendment. Does this law violate the First Amendment rights of the users of TikTok? Does it violate the both those who post, those who use it for business purposes? And so the question is this a violation of the First Amendment, or does national security trump the First Amendment in this case? And so that will be the question. And then that is going to take a while to work through the U.S. legal system. If the U.S. legal system finds that there is no First Amendment right here. The Congress made very clear this is a national security issue. National security trumps the First Amendment rights of the users of TikTok. Then ByteDance has to figure out if it's going to sell or not.
But just from a business standpoint, how does this even work? How does it get enforced? How does TikTok stay in the U.S.? It just sells itself. But that's not going to happen, is it? Especially if ByteDance says they have no intention of selling. So how does this end?
Well, and that, the question is, one, do we believe that ByteDance won't sell? Is ByteDance willing to give up, you know, potentially billions and billions of dollars to say we're going to just, you know, pick up our toys and go home? And part of what the U.S. argument is saying if the Chinese government is telling ByteDance you can't sell, this is making the point of the U.S. government. Well, the Chinese government is in charge of ByteDance.
Right?
You're making the point for the U.S. government if you're not going to be allowed to sell by the Chinese government. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of potential buyers out there. But the question is, it will be very difficult to walk through what is being sold. Can the algorithms, which is really what is the most valuable part of TikTok, is ByteDance willing to sell that to somebody? Mm. But you've had, you know, Activision has said at some point they were would look at this. Oracle and Walmart had said they would look at buying it. TikTok. Mm. This was a couple years ago.
Microsoft.
Microsoft has said that they had been interesting potentially. You have venture capital firms and other financial investors.
Neil was going to put a bid in for Abbey Rose to run it.
Yeah. I was.
Yeah.
Well, I think you were going to team up with the former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, I figured. Mnuchin and
Scaramucci. Yeah. He's starting a podcast this week.
So a lot of there are potential buyers, but the question is, will they sell?
Right.
Will they just pull out of the U.S. and say, you know what, we'll just stay focused in the U.S. In the EU and in Southeast Asia. But remember, TikTok has been banned by the government of India. So this has happened before and the world has moved forward. And TikTok doesn't even exist in China. So, I mean,
right.
Countries can survive without TikTok. Other things will come into their place, as happens in India, as happened in China, and would happen in the U.S. But this is a huge issue because it could impact U.S. companies are very worried because U.S. companies are saying, how is the Chinese government going to retaliate against U.S. companies where we've done nothing wrong? So much that U.S. companies are following this very closely, not because of the precedent it'll set in the U.S., but what could happen to them.
The unintended consequences of these things.
Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah.
All right, let's move forward to our next story. The Indonesian president is asking influencers to portray a positive image of Nusantara. That's the new capital that they're building in Borneo. They're expected to see 1.9 million people move there from Jakarta, but there's concerns about deforestation, whether the young people will want to move, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess it's not surprising that they would turn to influencers, is it, Steve?
No, this makes perfect sense. How they're doing it is going to be the question. But if you take a step back, right, the cost of building this new capital is projected at $30 billion. I think that's way low. But that's the number they're saying is $30 billion. Mm. It is that the Indonesian government is going to pay for 19% of it, and the other 81% will be paid by private investors. Guess how much money has been pledged by private investors of that 81% of $30 billion?
I'll say a billion.
20%.
How about zero?
Okay.
Zero. No money has come in yet because there's concern from the private investors. Is this thing ever going to get built? This was a Jokowi project. Is now that when Jokowi leaves, is this going to continue? So there's a question. There's governmental risk with this. But the other thing is you're going to need millions of people to move there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to get millions of, you know, people, you know, 18 to 30, whatever that demographic is, to say, I'm going to go into the literally middle of nowhere where nothing exists. And this is where I'm going to spend my years, where I'm going to want to have the most fun, have the most, you know, it could be fun through academics. It could be through cultural. It could be, hey, I want to go to bars and restaurants and clubs, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
You're going to convince these people to go to the middle of nowhere? And if and so if you're an investor, you say, I'm going to put this money in, but no one's going to move there. Well, then my investment isn't going to pay off.
That was going to be my point. I get it. I mean, I'm reading the stats. 270 million people in Indonesia are between 18 and 39. They've got some of the biggest social media platforms in the world.
Right.
We get that. However, there is always that credibility factor, Steve, isn't there, with influencers. Is an 18, 19-year-old TikToker really going to affect the decision-making of a battle-hardened hedge fund investor?
Well, but just let me add in here, a 16-minute video was posted by one social media influencer who on his YouTube channel. He's got 730,000 views on it and 21 million subscribers. So this guy is, you know, singing the praises, the greatest president with a proven track record, blah, 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 blah.
No one disputes the impact.
Like, no,
but does it cut through to hedge fund managers?
No, it doesn't. It's not the influencers are not to go to the hedge fund managers. The influencers are go to their fellow 18 to 29-year-olds to convince them to move.
But they need money to build the city first.
But if you do, but it's not a chicken or an egg. If I'm a finance I want to see who's living there, who's going to work there, who's going to be spending money there, because I'm not going to give you my money until I know other people are going to move there. So it's not a chicken or an egg.
So chicken and an egg.
You've got to convince 1.9 million people to move to the middle of nowhere.
But it's about the buzz, right? That's being created. Isn't that part of it?
Well, that's what they're trying to use these social media influencers for, is to talk to their peers to say, hey, this place is going to be great. This is going to be the, you know, quote unquote, smartest and most eco-friendly city in the world.
Awesome.
Let's all move there. And people are going, wait a second, you're chopping down trees.
Yeah.
You're moving, you know, you're forcing people
into the middle
who live
of
there now.
Virgin forest.
Yeah. Right. And you're forcing people to move who live there now to move. So you have forced displacement of people. You have an environmental impact. I've got nothing to do there. Why am I going to move there? Mm. And the government has said, we are looking at influencers as our strategic partners to help us get this place built, and that we need to get these influencers to go to their peer groups and get them excited about it.
But that's a contradiction, Steve. It is a chicken and egg situation. It is putting the cart before the horse. You can't convince millions of people to go to nowhere if the infrastructure isn't in place, the investment isn't in place, the housing isn't in place. You need the funding. I mean, to use an obvious example, Ford in my hometown in Dagenham set up Ford before the infrastructure was in place, and it was only Ford that saved the town because the infrastructure was already in place. You need business to go to a community.
And so the government has to put the money in first. The government then has to get the people to move there. And then the private sector financing comes after that. So it is one, government money. Two, you've got to get, you know, proof of concept. You need to show that there is going to be a capital there. You need to show that no matter what, the Indonesian government is going to go forward on this. Only after you have all of that, then you'll get the private sector financing to come in. And that is, and the problem they're worried about is that no one's going to move there, or they're not going to get enough people to move there, because the young people are like, I got nothing to do. I'm going to be bored. One of the commentators said, for Gen Z, there are fears that the city lacks entertainment options or places for healing, which is Indonesian slang for taking a long break, right? So you have to get those influencers at the first stage to involve the young civil servants to say, I'm going to give up Jakarta and I'm going to go to the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened yet. So look, the Biden campaign is trying to do the same thing with influencers. And you see the Biden campaign inviting people to the White House. You see him inviting people to do events with him. So getting influencers involved is what you should be doing. But whether they're doing it the right way, whether these people have credibility, whether it's seen as something that they truly believe in, or if they are quote unquote buzzers, a new term I've learned, right? If you're a buzzer, then it doesn't count. Neil, do you know what a buzzer is?
Not a clue. Don't really care. What is it?
A buzzer is someone who accepts payments for promotion.
Exactly.
Huh. Right?
And just to bring it back home, I've already seen complaints that people who went to the Hamilton premiere, there were influencers there, and they were live tweeting, live sharing during the beginning of the production.
Is that right?
Credibility is a factor with influencers, just generally.
I have to say, I did not see anybody when I was there with their phones on, which was nice. But
I was up near the front. I was in the third row, so yeah. Perhaps there were people.
You are a living influencer. Just your presence makes you an influencer.
Legend in my own lunchtime. All right, Steve, let's move on. Now, our final story. James McCartney teamed up with Sean Ono Lennon, if you remember those and know those two names, our dear listeners, for Primrose Hill, a ballad with echoes of the Beatles' aesthetic. Are we in Gen 2 of the Beatles in a way that is meaningful?
Well, you know, and looking at their ages, you know, Sean and James, you know, are 48 and 47. Yeah,
they're not kids anymore.
They're not
Harry Styles.
These aren't kids. And so, you know, part of it is you really want to say, look, they should be able to do what they want to do.
Sure.
If they want to be musicians, they should be musicians. We should be positive about that. And then, you know, you see reviews, you know, that say two Nepo babies write up a track which is not a quarter as good. Is the worst work of their parents.
Oh, and that's kind of harsh. Huh?
I mean, you know, are they referring to Back to the Egg? Right? I mean, where are we going on this? But part of it is, boy, you know, it's not a bad song. I mean, I listened to it.
It's okay.
It's okay. It's all right. Mm. You know, one of the best comments was from Zach Starkey, who is 59.
So that's Ringo Starr's son.
Ringo's son. So Zach, who is, I saw him actually. I think I saw him play with The Who.
He plays with The Who. He plays with Oasis.
Yeah. Plays with both. He said that, you know, the Beatles are a wall you cannot go through, over, or under. I was 25 when I came to terms with that. Up until then, I was so effing frustrated by it. And so I give him credit.
I give him credit. For anyone who doesn't know, James McCartney has been out of the public spotlight. Unlike Stella McCartney, there's a Nepo baby,
right?
Yeah. He's been making music for years. Do you know in his early days, he would tour small bars and clubs in the US, the UK, Europe, under a different name.
Is that right?
He wouldn't even use his own name. But even his father was like, look, I christened you James McCartney. That's your name. Use it. He's never, to my knowledge, leveraged off his father's fame or wealth. And Sean Ono Lennon, pretty much the same. Now, I don't have a big issue with this, do you?
I don't. Now, of course, I would expect somebody who named their daughter after a Beatles album to have that.
Yeah. But I'm not hoping it gives her a pop career. I just like the name.
Great. No, there's no better name than Abbey Rose.
Thank you.
I mean, that is just such a testament. But it shows how much cultural influence the Beatles have.
Yeah.
And will have, certainly for our lifetimes, you know, and who knows for how much, you know, longer than that.
It did spawn the Abbey Rose and the Magic Suitcase children's book series, if anybody's interested, to bring it back home again.
Bring it back home to Neil.
The shameless plugs on this show.
Final point, because I would love to get readers' comments on this. This whole Nepo baby thing, I actually think is a nonsense, because it's gone on since time immemorial. Your grandfather, if he worked in the coal mine, would try and get you a job in the coal mine. Yeah. How is that any different to a famous rock star opening a door for someone, or a politician?
Just because they're in the public eye.
Or Steve Aoki getting great internships for his kids.
Yeah.
It's what parents do. It's nothing new.
Nothing new. And, you know, like, and they're open about it. And, you know, the name of the song, which I did not realize. So, Neil, my last trivia question for you. Primrose Hill. Do you know what that's a reference to?
I know it's a place in London, and I know there is a Beatles reference in there somewhere. Did they live there?
My cousin Janet lives right there at Primrose Hill.
Yeah. Fall on the Hill.
No, it
listener
is.
Of
it
the
is.
Show?
It is where John said they should go and film what became the rooftop concert for Let It Be.
Yes, I remember that now. That's very good. Good trivia to start the show and end the show. Good stuff,
awesome.
Steve.
So yeah, so great. So I'll make the plug. Listen to the song. It's a pleasant song. You know, Primrose Hill, you can find it anywhere. Find it on, I'm sure it must be on Spotify, YouTube. Maybe we can use this, right? The listener talked about what great songs that the Money FM plays during the Saturday morning show. You should add this to the rotation, Glenn. Add this to the rotation.
I'll get right on it in my spare time.
And we don't believe in Nepo babies at all, but my daughter lead singer is going to play guitar with Max.
Yes.
And your son is going to direct the video.
Right after Max is done interning here at the show on every Saturday.
Bennett is interned here. Max is interned here.
Abby Rose
is interned here.
Keeping in the family. All right, guys. Thanks, Steve. We'll see you next week.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO. Audio at the App Store and Google Play.